February Thuldike, they call this month, and until quite recently it could more or less be relied upon to do just that. Rain hard enough and long enough to fill all the dikes, or as we call them in the Elam Valley, the ditches. But for the last couple of years here in Kent, February might have been doing its best, but the other months have been busily emptying ditches rather than filling them. True, we have had a sprinkling of rain or two, but I've seen babies' bottoms that have been wetter than our valley bottom is at the moment. Worse still, February and its pals have not been doing their job of filling the aquifers, nature's natural storage tanks in the chalk, and they're being asked to cope with the ever-growing call for water from the towns. Some of this water, what's left of it, lies pretty deep, although perhaps not quite so deep as William Cobbett on one of his rural rides in the 1820s was told.
As I was riding along the top of this hill in Kent, I saw the corn backward. I was just thinking to go up to some house to ask how far they had to go for water, when I saw a large well bucket and all the chains and tackles belonging to such a concern. But here was also the tackle for a horse to work in drawing up the water. I asked about the depth of the well, and the information I received must have been incorrect, because I was told it was 300 yards.
Cobbett made his inquiry in the local pub, so no wonder he was misinformed. That's par for the course in Kentish pubs. But the wells round here are pretty deep. How deep? My friend Tom found out the hard way.
Something got lost down there, and they come over and got me and asked me if I'd go down. I thought I was going to ride down in a skip, and I had to bloody walk down. I said I hadn't had it coming down. I had to walk the whole bloody lot.
How deep?
Ah, no, I can't really remember. It's a deep one, but I can't remember how deep it was. I know my legs ache when I got to the bottom, I can tell you.
Fortunately, we do have a well that's easier to get at, St. Ethelberga's well, which has been delivering the goods for centuries. When it feels like it, it supplies a rather mysterious stream.
Through the valley, beside the railway, runs the Nailbourne, a stream which rises in a ploughed field near Sibton Park, on the high road from Liminge to Elam, and runs in the direction of Wingmore Court, when it disappears in a flint pit known as Old Mother Brompton's Pot. A mile further on, it reappears and runs towards Littlebourne.
Nobody in the bar of the King's Arms in Elam seems to be quite sure about Old Mother Brompton or her pot.
They always told me that was an old stone quarry. And when the Nailbourne comes through, it disappeared there for so many weeks before it filled up and then it overflowed. But the first name of Newman would be the Old Mother Brompton's pot.
Even George Palmer, whose land it's supposed to be on, wasn't too sure about the pot.
Well, the only one I know is in what we call our lower meadow, where it does go to a certain point and then disappears very quickly, and then travels underground and then comes up at the other side of World's Wonder.
World's Wonder. Now, there's another countryside mystery. The farm's just up the valley from George's place, and it's marked World's Wonder in bold letters on my map of 1768. But no one, not even George, knows exactly why it should be called World's Wonder. One ingenious theory is that something strange, like a two-headed calf, may have been born there. Who knows? The point about the equally mysterious Nailbourne is that it's by way of being an occasional event.
This spring, like all Nailbournes, only rises every few years, once in 7 years, some old residents say. The volume of water from the spring differs at different periods. Sometimes it flows so strongly that the small bridges crossing the bed of the stream become too small, and the water consequently becomes in flood.
Well, my mother's got a book with from the Elam Valley, from Folkestone right through to Patrick's Corner, I think it is. And there's some pictures in there of the bus going through the water where the Nailbourne's flowing. And it, you know, it's quite a way up.
Last time the Nailbourne flooded, I remember it came more than quite a way up my car. Come to think of it, that was about 7 years ago. This erratic behaviour of the Nailbourne's pretty obviously due to the state of the water table, how badly February Thuldike has been doing his job. But there is another rather fascinating explanation. St. Augustine, it seemed, arrived in Kent to convert us all in 597 to find the place in a terrible state of drought. So he did the saintly thing, even though he wasn't actually a fully paid-up saint at the time. He knelt and he prayed. Bingo!
Upon the very spot, a spring of water bubbled up and ran along the countryside, moistened the dry roots of the grass, and instead of a parched, barren waste, a rich green hue spread itself all over the Elam Valley.
So far, so good. One up to the prospective saint. But wait.
Then along came Woden and Thunor, the heathen gods, and they stopped the course of the river by making great caverns underground, while sometimes they dried up the waters by breathing on them with fiery, hellish breath. But the angel of the streams fought with Woden and Thunor, sometimes conquering, sometimes conquered. And still beneath the earth do they fight in their struggle for mastery.
Well, the result in the valley at the moment seems to be angel nil, Woden and Thunor united, quite a lot, because there are parts where you can easily walk along the bed of the stream itself, even though you might end up with muddy boots. But this water shortage is no joke for the farmers. If it should rain until May, you wouldn't find them complaining. It's not just a matter of drinking water for the animals, it's their food, too. And this has been going on for the past 3 years. One man I knew in 1990 moved his sheep 3 times from field to field to find enough grass. And George Palmer had the same sort of trouble.
Yes, yes. The side of the chalk banks, of course, dry out very, very quickly. And there's only about, a couple of inches of soil on the top. So as soon as you do get a dry spell, they just dry burn right off.
And when, like last year, the grass finally did grow, it was long and a bit rank, not the best kind for sheep.
They can cope with long grass, but it's not doing them nearly as much good as short grass would. In the spring, I had this put in the appropriate number of sheep into this field, and because it was cold, the grass didn't grow. So I had to feed them barley right through to the end of May, which normally we wouldn't dream of doing. And then the grass started to grow as we drew the lambs away for market, and now it's grown right away from them. And this is part of the trouble, that grass never really dries out, so the sheep are always wet.
Water was not only essential for the farmers of Elam in the 19th century, it fueled, as you might say, one of the local industries, now long gone, brickmaking. But the water didn't come from the unreliable Nailbourne.
Although the bricks were made close to the railway station, the clay was dug and puddled at Exted Farm on the high land above the Row. And this was run by gravitation through pipes to the spot where the kilns are still to be seen below Cock Lane, in order that the bricks, when made, should be close to the railway station.
You can't actually see the kilns now, any more than you can see the railway station. The Elam Valley Railway, once an important twin track for goods and passengers between Folkestone and Canterbury, dwindled to a single track and was finally removed nearly 50 years ago. But it was that bit about gravitation that bothered me. It's true that Exted Farm is on the high land above the Row. I know because I live in the Row, which is sometimes called Old Road because it was the original high road to Canterbury. A bit hard to believe when you think that it's only 16 feet wide in places, notably where my house is. A bit worrying when the giant dust cart makes its rounds on Fridays. The trouble is that there is another valley between the Row and Exted. So in order to get to the brickfield, the clay and water mixture, as far as I can make out, would have had to run for a quarter of a mile up a slope of 45 degrees. Bit of a task even for the magic of Woden and his mate. George Palmer, who knows almost all that there is to know about the brickfield area, he found that too, came up with the most acceptable explanation, that we're talking about two different places here.
I'm not sure that it went down to that brickyard, or whether it went to whether there was a brickyard round by where Pegbins are now, or Comet Marine, because there's kiln field, etc., etc., and brickyard cottages, and so on. And that then would have just been a downhill flow from the wash mill at Exted. And it didn't get moved probably to the brickyard until the railway went through which made it easier to transport the bricks away.
There's obviously some more detective work to be done. The brickyard was certainly productive in its time. For my friend Tom, when he was a little lad, it turned out to be quite a profitable place.
Well, as I say, us lads were coming down one day and walking down through the brickfields, and I happened to go down one of the dips and I see my auntie in the bottom, and she was with one of some chap who was giving her one, put it that way, and he gave me two rabbits and a hare to keep me mouth shut. As I say, I sold the two rabbits to the butchers and let the hare.
Two rabbits and a hare may not sound like much of a bribe nowadays for a young lad, but the odd rabbit or hare is still a useful diet supplement round about Elam.
I keep my dogs and I keep my ferrets, I have them in my keeping. To catch those hares that run by night while the gamekeepers lie sleeping. My dogs and I went out on a cold night to view the habitation. Up jumped a hare and away she did run, straight into a plantation.
Presumably, the ferrets stayed at home for that particular outing, because one thing ferrets don't do is to chase hares.
The ferret, an albino of some species of wild polecat, bred to assist in the killing of rabbits and rats. For rabbiting, they've been used since the first century and are mentioned by Pliny. They're muzzled and put into the burrows from which the rabbits bolt to the guns or into nets.
Just down back with his guns, the old, and old Barry and myself used to put the nets up, put the ferret in. And I used to, because I was young, you know, when they come out, they left me to get the rabbits in the nets. But by God, if one came out of a hole that wasn't netted and old fired his gun, I used to lay flat.
Well, we went from New Barn to Itching Hill. Could say there was a lot of rabbits along, and all there was a blinking rat. Yeah? All their ferrets were laughing. It's spiteful, I tell you.
Now, I have to disagree with Bert there. My own ferret Twiggy, besides being an exemplary wife and mother, was more affectionate than any of the other household animals. I think this was because, unlike her husband and her offspring, Twiggy never soiled her claws with gainful toil. Rather like Brian.
I found this ferret running around in my backyard, which was next to Arthur's. He had a great gash under, whether he'd been caught in a trap or whatever, and it became my pet. Brian, his name was. This was a lovely Brian the ferret. And I truthfully, I play a bit of... I played concertina and melodeon. And used to take Brian out on a bit of string with my melodeon. I was sitting in the sort of the square in Newington and squeeze, and he was a lovely old chap.
Perhaps there'll be other ferrets joining Brian as musician's assistant, because there are fewer opportunities for a working ferret nowadays. The imported disease myxomatosis, which still crops up from time to time, has led to a breed of rabbit which lives mostly above the ground. But, especially down in the London to Dover railway embankment, there are still burrows to be explored.
Ferreting's bloody good sport, there's no doubt about it.
Well, one thing's certain. If you do go ferreting this month, you'll probably stay dry.
I keep my